Amen. You may be seated. Happy Monday before Thanksgiving break. We're almost there. I woke up this morning and told my wife it's Wednesday. Only got 3 days this week. And it's the sock days. It is. It's here. Winter has come. So just know. Whoa. Okay, socks on today. I think I put them on inside out. So anyway. Glad that you're here today. Hey, we've been traveling through the Sermon on the Mount all semester long, and we had the privilege today to have our own president, Dr. Knapp, who's going to lead us through that today in the Sermon on the Mount. Would you welcome President John Knapp?
Thanks, Paul. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody. There we go. Little chilly outside today, so put on your coats this evening. 6:30, we're going to have the lighting of the Hope Christmas tree. It's right there between my house and Voorhees. We'll have Christmas caroling, lots of snacks. It's a really fun time. I hope you guys will plan to join us then at 6:30 this evening. Well, we are continuing through the Sermon on the Mount, and we just keep finding more little nuggets of wisdom in this relatively brief passage in the Scripture. And this morning, I want us to turn to the 6th chapter of Matthew, the 19th verse to begin with, where Jesus tells us, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Pretty straightforward, simple, not all that challenging, but just a couple of verses later, as Jesus often does, he makes his point in a little bit more challenging way. He says, "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." And lest we breeze past that a little too quickly, we ought to stop and pause and think about, are we really to take Jesus seriously? You know, he doesn't say, "It's okay to love money as long as you love God a little bit more." He actually says you can't love both. In fact, he even tells us that to love money is to despise God. I think that's a pretty challenging teaching in a society like ours, where so much of how we measure ourselves, how we measure our success, how we envision what it means to be thankful at this time of year is measured in dollars and cents. We live in a world where we attach dollars and cents to each other. We think about how much money does a person make, and we'll say, "Well, what is she worth?" We think about how much a particular job might pay, and that determines how attractive it might be for us. Sometimes our parents might say, "Well, tell me about that major. How much money can you make doing that?" And I think that's just a reminder that so often we measure our own worth and the worth of the things that we do in dollars and cents. And it seems to me that Jesus wants us to take this very seriously. He actually makes the point again in Luke 16:13, the very same little proverb. He repeats it again there. I think there are several lessons for us in what I find to be a pretty difficult teaching in our society that is so much focused on the achievement of things based on the accumulation of wealth as measured in dollars and cents. And the first of those is that I think one thing Jesus has in mind is that a love of wealth, a desire for wealth, only leads to a desire for more and more of it. You're never really satisfied. I think for us, one of the questions that we might ask ourselves that's very difficult in American society is, how much is enough for me? Have you ever really thought about that for yourself? Have you ever asked, is there an amount of wealth, is there an amount of prosperity, an amount of income that we might say, you know, that would be enough, and I would be satisfied with that, and I wouldn't need any more. And in fact, maybe if I could achieve that, I would be willing to be generous with whatever other blessings came to me and share it with others. I don't know that that's an easy question. How much is enough for me in a world that wants to tell us there's never too much? We should always aspire to more. And yet in Ecclesiastes, in the 5th chapter, we find some very, very old ancient wisdom that says, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. I think that's one of the things Jesus is driving at, this recognition that when we love wealth, it's an all-consuming drive to have more of it. A second lesson is that a desire for wealth indicates that we're seeking our security in the wrong place. You know, just before Jesus gives us this challenging word about wealth, he talks about not putting your treasure in earthly things, but storing up treasure in heaven. The suggestion that maybe we should put our priority in something else. Well, I think one reason for that is that we recognize that when we seek our security in how much wealth we can accumulate, it can lead to a false sense of security. In Proverbs, in the 18th chapter, we read, "The wealth of the rich is their fortified city. They imagine it an unscalable wall." You get the word imagine. It's an illusion that your wealth can make you entirely self-sufficient. You can protect yourself if you just have enough. And in fact, you might not even need God if you just have enough wealth to take care of yourself. And the proverb goes on to say, "The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe." And so we get this contrast between seeking security in wealth and seeking security in the Lord. And then we find a particularly challenging teaching in the book of Proverbs where we are told that we should pray like this: "Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of my God." And you know, scholars say that when Jesus says, just a little earlier in the Sermon on the Mount, where he gives us those words of the Lord's Prayer again, when Jesus says we should pray for daily bread, that he's actually referring to this proverb that says we should ask God only for daily bread. The idea that we in our society would actually pray, "Give me neither poverty nor riches," I can imagine any of us would pray, "Don't make me poor." But the thought that we would actually pray and ask God not to make me rich, I mean, can you imagine how that contrasts with everything that a consumerist society stands for, all the things that we in our own ways are guilty of aspiring to? And yet here is this proverb saying, if I'm rich, I might disown God and say, "Who is the Lord? Who needs God?" And by the same token, God doesn't want us to be poor. And it says, if I'm poor, I might dishonor the name of God. And so the notion that if we could just be rich enough, we would have what we need, I think is also very much caught up in this American idea of being a self-made person. You've heard that expression. Somebody who's really successful, maybe an entrepreneur, for example, and we'll say, "Oh, you know, he's a self-made man, pulled himself up by his own bootstraps." And again, what have we said? We've said, this person doesn't need anyone else. This person did it all on his own, doesn't need God, doesn't need the rest of us. And in Deuteronomy, in the 8th chapter, in the 17th verse, we read, "You may say to yourself, 'My power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me,' but remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth." And then a third reason that I think Jesus takes this desire for wealth so seriously is that I think Jesus recognizes and teaches throughout his teaching in the New Testament that wealth draws us more into ourselves, makes us more self-centered, draws us not only away from God, but away from others. The desire for wealth is to put our own interests first in a way that often neglects the interests of others. You know, we see this in a really challenging way here in Jesus' teaching in the 18th chapter of Matthew, where he tells the story of the unforgiving servant. We often hear that parable of the unforgiving servant as a parable about how we should forgive in the way that God forgives. And indeed, that's the context in which it's taught, because Jesus is responding to Peter's question about forgiveness. But we might read it in another way. Let me just remind you of what the story says. Jesus says, "The kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. 'Please be patient with me,' he begged. 'I'll pay back everything.' The servant's master took pity on him. He canceled the debt and he let him go. But when the servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him and began to choke him. "Pay back what you owe me," he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, "Please be patient with me and I'll pay it back." But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and went and told the master everything that had happened, and the master called the servant in. "You wicked servant," he said. "I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you?" Well, it is indeed a great story of forgiveness and the need to forgive in the way that we have been forgiven. I think it's also a story about the power of money. I think when Jesus talks about serving two masters, this is what he's talking about. He's talking about a servant who not only had the master who forgave him of his debt, he was freed from the debt that he owed his master, and yet he was not freed from the master that wealth was in his own life. And so that desire for money, that self-interest continued to have a claim on him, and he just couldn't bring himself to let go of it. He couldn't bring himself to say, "This is enough for me. I will forgive my fellow servant." And so at Thanksgiving, I think it's maybe interesting for us to ask ourselves this question about how much is enough for me. Should we give thanks only in proportion to how much our financial prosperity might be? In other words, should I be more thankful the more I have, or should I be thankful for God's grace in some other way? Can we actually bring ourselves at this time of year to pray as Jesus prayed, for neither poverty nor riches, but for daily bread? And I think in that prayer, really, is a prayer to ask God to help us discern, how much is enough for me? How much is enough for me to be satisfied that my needs are taken care of so that I might share more generously with others? Let me end with the words of the 100th Psalm. "Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name." Why do we give thanks? The psalm goes on to say, "We give thanks because the Lord is good and his love endures forever." And that ought to be enough. Have a great day.